Hello,
Hello,
hello. Good to see you
hello.
again.
Yeah, same here.
What's up, everybody? We'll give it a couple seconds to let people join. Well, we're all on time. Faisal, Guillaume, what's going on?
Good morning.
Hey guys.
Yeah. Good
Hello.
morning. Good morning. Good afternoon. And good night,
Good
if
night.
it's noon. How's sunny Arizona, Guillaume? Is it
Well,
sunny
we are in
in?
the coldest possible, so it's probably like 10 degrees.
That's not too bad.
Yeah, it's not too
Faisal,
bad. Sunny and nice.
how are you doing, Faisal?
Yeah, I'm doing good. I'm doing good.
You
Unfortunately,
sound.
Nigeria isn't that cold. It's quite hot here still.
Yeah, no, it's good, man. You sound. I think this is the clearest I've heard you for a little while.
Awesome. Yeah,
You
I'm
sound rapid.
excited for this talk.
Nice. We'll give it a couple more seconds. I'm just going to ping a few people in, see if we can get some other people to join. Otherwise, we'll start shortly. Vishu, you're in London, I assume.
I'm based in
Yeah.
London.
This is actually our first London-based podcast. Even though
Oh
I moved back to the UK a few months ago, I only just actually moved into London this month. That's how bad the
wow.
rental market has been.
Yeah, the things are again going up. The rents are going up, the prices of housing going up, so
It was definitely a challenge to find a good place to move into. Anyway, let's kick it off. So, welcome everyone to Architect Network number 34, designed for video games with Zaha's Vishu Bhushan. Vishu Bhushan, I hope I pronounced that correctly. To maybe give you a little bit of an introduction, that for those of you who don't already know Vishu, Vishu is an associate at Zaha and part of their computational group, Zaha Code. You also teach for a little while at the AA and the Bartlett, right? I've actually had a good few students reach out about you, so it was kind of a good time to have you on.
Yeah, cool.
Thank you for joining us. I think it's an interesting, super interesting topic. One I've definitely been interested for a little while, and obviously you guys have just had your collaboration, so I thought it'd be a good time to bring you on and let's talk video games essentially.
Yeah, cool. Many thanks for the invite and hello to everyone.
And welcome to Clubhouse. You'll see he's got the little Clubhouse celebration sticker. So
Yeah, this is my first one, so good start.
this is yeah, I think we're still debating whether to hang around on the Clubhouse world or whether we go to YouTube or something like that. But we'll stick in there since this is where we started. But yeah, I thought maybe what would be good to kick things off is to, I mean, you've been at Zaha for quite a while now, right? You've been there for about 8 or 9 years, if I recall from your LinkedIn. And you've always been part of Zaha Code, right? So for those of you who don't know too much about Zaha Code, do you want to just explain what Zaha Code is? What do you guys focus on, and like how do you collaborate with the other clusters, right? Because in Zaha you have these different clusters going on.
I've been here at Zahadid Architects for, as you said, 8 years. I've been always been part of the computation and design group. The group was started in 2007 by Patrick Schumacher, Shajai Bhushan, and Niels Fischer. So the goal of the group was to have project independent research, but while at the same time research based on practice. So one of the mandate was to create this kind of network of collaborators, both at academia but also with design technologies. So it could be from people in computer graphics, machine learning, now and more so with the digital fabricators and computational designers in general. So that was like initially started off as being like doing quite a lot of project independent research, but then slowly we were also part of our time is to work with business clusters and their projects. So we need to, so that's why our research is kind of based on practice-based research. So it needs to feed back into some kind of project-related things. And that's how we collaborate on wide ranges of projects in the office, ranging from master plans to metro stations to stadiums, housing, etc. But the main seed of research happens through what is these kind of technology demonstrators. When we partner up with a technology partner, be it be like PUBG in the gaming industry, or it could be like someone who's technology related to fabrication, such as Stratasys, who's into 3D printing, or incremental 3D into concrete printing, or with academic groups like Block Research Group at ETH. We also run workshops at the Digital Future. So yeah, so it's kind of an interesting mix of situating our research in between practice and academia.
Yeah, interesting. Yeah, I think that's a nice mix. So you're obviously like at the R&D end of the practice, but are you also kind of like in-house consultants, right, for computational stuff or particular, like, you know, if there's a project that needs a bit of computational firepower, they also reach out to you, or is it more research kind of focused?
Yeah, so we need to, let's say 60% of our time is on projects. So we are embedded into project teams, and 40% of our time is in research. That's kind of that's kind of the mix we are kind of going for. And so in projects, sometimes we are in competition stage, like very early conceptual stage, and sometimes we are in schematic design. Sometimes we are called upon in later stage rationalization in DD and so. So we are kind of involved in all the workings of the office in terms of projects, but we also collaborate with like our in-house exhibitions team. So we create and curate content for exhibitions, and CODE is a part of our technology cluster. So one of the teams is CODE. So there is also BIM team, and there is environmental and sustainability, and there is a workspace team. So out of which CODE is the one of the oldest teams in that cluster.
Oh, I see. Okay, so you're in a cluster, and it contains these other kind of sort of technology driven teams kind of thing.
Yes. Yeah.
Oh, interesting. Yeah. No, I think that's a good mix of, you know, being on projects, but also testing new tools and technologies. I think that's, I have a similar goal to always be 60% on projects and 40% on not, but obviously it ebbs and flows, right? Sometimes you get absorbed by projects. There's never enough time to test too many, you know, cool stuff on the horizon. And I feel like we're in a time where it's like, there's so many threads to follow. Obviously the theme today we'll touch on the video game side, but it's almost hard not to talk about, you know, the metaverse and blockchain. I feel like blockchain, video games, and the metaverse are all kind of converging together at the same time, let alone talking about computational design and BIM and all the other stuff that's super exciting.
Yeah, like in that sense, metaverse is like a natural extension for us. So it's kind of like house of computation. So we should naturally be interested in doing things there. So yeah, it's also one of the research strands we have in the group. So working for metaverse, and this collaboration with the video games is one aspect of that.
Yeah. So we've also, I don't know if you've met Faisal before, but Faisal is a co-founder of Elusa, which is a kind of metaverse platform. Maybe Faisal, if you want to pitch it, you'll do a much better job than I would.
Yeah, sure. So we're essentially a metaverse company, and we design mini metaverses for companies, and also we're designing and building our own platform, both on web VR and also standalone platform. And it's actually a lot of it, especially the research part, is inspired in some form by Patrick Schumacher's writings, because you know I'm a big fan of Patrick's, and I know he's been talking about cyberspace for a while now, about how you know space is extended not just in physical but through fields and through also virtual spaces, and how every surface, for example, in architecture is also a medium for communication. And I did want to ask, do you guys consider that in your actual physical projects? Do you guys build like digital twins, or consider all of the surfaces in terms of the legacy phase of the project, how it would be used if, for example, we all started using smart glasses, how it could be augmented later on, and you know, just things like that to do with the future of how we interact with architecture?
Oh yeah, cool. Nice meeting you, Faisal. Good to know people who are doing things in the metaverse. That's one area we're super interested as well.
Likewise.
Yeah, in terms of doing digital twin and this kind of having a cyber physical equivalence. Yeah, we are starting to do that. Like one of the projects, probably as Patrick might have presented recently, is the Liberland project, where we are doing like the metaverse. So it is simulating in the digital first and before actual realization. So that's kind of a leeway from what is existing currently, such as Decentraland, right? So that's kind of the closest it is to. But what's happening is in the metaverse, we are trying to incubate or test things out in the digital before actual realization. So if you invest in Liberland metaverse, you are actually investing in an actual land on their physical space. So that's how we are trying to combine the digital and the physical and see first simulated digitally. And then if it is successful, then it gets implemented in the physical world. So it's the same.
Super cool. Sorry, go ahead.
Yeah, it's the same with the digital twin as well, right? So it is, it's kind of used for later stage occupancy and management of the building. So it becomes quite useful, and there's research going into that as well.
That's amazing, man. That's amazing. Are you aware of the parametric semiology project that Patrick has also been engaged in for some years now? And is that being considered in the metaverse? Because I know, like right now, you know, the metaverse industry has been led by the gaming industry for a while now. But as architects and other, you know, disciplines also engage with it, we're bringing in some of our expertise. And, you know, the parametric semiology project, like agent-based crowd modeling and how we can control and then sort of generate spaces based on human interaction, is an interesting addition to that space, right? Because in gaming, you only have like the characters, and then you have like NPCs, like non-player characters, and it's not as informed as we would, you know, we would like, you know, as designers. So I just wanted to know if you guys also consider that, and if you guys are using any sort of AI generated algorithms to actually generate your metaverse spaces.
Yeah, so yeah, parametric semiology, agent-based parametric semiology is another research group in the technology cluster. So they do contribute to the discussion of the metaverse. And in general, our design principles are kind of driven by navigability without any signages. So we think, when we think of the digital space, that anything goes. But actually, if it is not navigable, we generally found that like people get lost. So it needs to somehow be close to reality in that sense, that you should be able to navigate it on your own accord, rather than having signages, you need to take a left, right? And that's kind of the principle when it comes to design in the physical world. And the same applies for the digital as well. And whether it's being the metaverse or the game, or the gameplay, etc. So only the navigate, if it comes to gaming, the navigation is a bit different than how we would navigate physical buildings, because especially if it's a shooting game, you need to consider that you need to have hideouts so you can have a vantage point and shoot people. But still, it is navigation based, right? So that's, we try to apply that kind of knowledge, which we are kind of developing for our physical world, but try to adapt it to requirements of gameplay or requirements of the metaverse.
Yeah, absolutely, man. And you know, it's like there's a lot of rethinking of the methodology of design that has to be done when designing for the metaverse, right? All the constraints, all the parameters are completely different. Have you guys come up with a new workflow or a new methodology of your own when approaching the metaverse? How much rethinking has to go into the process when you're approaching it? Because when you look at most platforms today, right, it seems like everyone is replicating the physical world. So I was just on, Facebook's workrooms the other day, and they have columns in there, they have lighting fixtures, they have panelized wood. And all of these things obviously make sense in the real world because of fabrication and because of lighting and gravity, et cetera. But in the metaverse, none of this, applies. So how much rethinking actually has to go into, the design process when you're designing for these spaces?
I think maybe just to add to that, that was definitely one of my questions of like, I actually, like, would architects be the best to design in either, video games or the metaverse, for example, because we've been so trained for a long time to think about gravity, how much stuff costs, how do you build that thing? And what makes architects great is they can actually, navigate all of these real world parameters and still, create something amazing. I think some architects will be great at it, but some will really struggle because it's almost, do you know what I mean? It's too free. It's like unshackling
aspects
from the real world.
Yeah, it's an interesting domain, right? It's an interesting question. We also think about it in the sense that, that's something we also thought, like when we're designing the game, that there are not many constraints, but why do we? We need, as designers, we need to bring in some constraints. So one was the navigability, but when it thinks about optimization in the physical world, we are thinking about structure, we are thinking about fabrication, etc. But when it comes to the gaming industry or the metaverse, it is related to performance. So your economy here is a number of polygons your phone can handle, or your AWS server can handle. So not all geometries are feasible in the sense of the polygon count. So that's your budget. So now we need to design with that constraint that we have to limit ourselves to performance related things. So that's something we learned with our experience with PUBG, is that we need to optimize the geometry still, but in this case, instead of optimizing for budget of economic constraints, we need to optimize it for performance and polygon budget, which is inherently part of these game technologies. So
the new currency of building.
yeah. So again, then it becomes a feature driven again. So you need to have certain features you want to highlight where you are trying to put in all the performance into, and then there are certain areas where you would reduce the performance or trying to reduce the features such that you don't compromise on the main feature spaces. So in that sense, a bit you're changing perception or the design sense, I would say, that it's similar to the physical world in that sense, you're trying to pick few things you want to highlight and putting a lot of performance into that, and then certain other things where you're not giving it as much importance. So yeah, it'll, as the computation grows, then there'll be more and more freeform geometries coming into games as well. But at the core of it, again, it can't be, it still helps that the spaces are navigable. And that is why architects would be needed, because they know how to design these spaces which can be navigated. And that's, I think that's why we should still need designers, still be part of designing of the metaverse.
Yeah, that's such a good point, man. Optimize. It's all about the polygons and the triangles. But also, how much do you try to keep the real world in the metaverse? Because although this is super important that you do need to rethink everything, I feel like there is some part of like human psychology and human intuition that is needed in the metaverse, or else it becomes completely disoriented, right? For example, yes. Something as simple as having a floor for the characters and the avatars to walk on, right? That's not really needed because there's no gravity, but we still have it in most platforms because of that sort of that intuitive nature of human beings needing a floor in order to walk on, right? So how much of the real world do you keep in there just for navigation purposes or just for semiology, for example?
Yeah, so that depends on what the metaverse is doing. So one of the metaverse we were, was Liberland, where we were, so there is a physical equivalent. So there is going to be, it's going to be done physically as well. So whilst you can remove some of the constraints, maybe that there are no columns and these kind of constraints can be removed, but still it needs to function as a building because in the physical world, it's going to be a building. So because there is a physical equivalence, we need to consider some aspects of the physical world. So it has to function as a building, people should be able to navigate, etc. But we also did another, like an NFT gallery for Kenny Charter. That's where it's a gallery for showcasing NFT art. So that's where we thought, okay, now, because we are designing the gallery in the digital, so what is it that we can do there, which is not possible in the physical? So you can have, so let's say there was one of the boards, was one of the objects in the gallery. So then you can start showcasing that the boat is floating around. You can show the object in 3D, and you can do cut sections, explode them. So these things are not feasible in the physical world, but very much feasible in the digital. And so that's where it's getting interesting. So because you're able to perceive the object and perceive the space with an all new dimension, right, which is generally not in the physical space. So, and that's where it's getting interesting. And we would like to explore that a bit more as well as we go forward.
Yeah, I think there was, I did a virtual crit of the Futurely guys, one of their kind of classes that they did. And, you know, the participants had created like a bunch of different like pavilions, I guess, or things that you can explore. And interestingly, like the ones that went completely bonkers and it was like, you know, something that was like a blobby spaceship that was just totally out there, it was kind of hard to connect with because it was just like an object. Mm-hmm. But then a couple of the other students did like, you know, a tower that was made of arches, and there was something quite, but they just took it to quite an extreme level, and there was something quite interesting about it being familiar. Like obviously they didn't need columns like an arch structure, but there was something quite interesting about taking the real and like turning up to 11, and so it's familiar yet crazy. That seemed to be quite interesting. Like that just drew me more than the stuff that was like you know, this completely alien object that was just floating kind of thing. So I feel like there is that psychology part, isn't there, of like designing, whether it's for the metaverse or video games, that it's crazy yet familiar, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, I think like a lot of people would like to have that familiarity so that they can experience the space, but at the same time you can disassociate certain things, like for example, I think, I don't know if you guys seen there was Improbable, they were kind of doing a K-pop concert.
Yeah.
So where the artist was in that digital world was scaled up, so they were much more bigger than the participants.
So
these kind of things can be done, so that is not, which is not possible in the physical. And then there are slabs floating around, so people are there, so you don't have there is a semblance of an arena, the key parts of the arena, but the main the structural bits and other features can be kind of toned down. So, but still you need that arena kind of things to, for people to come together, stand together and enjoy the conference or the concert.
Yeah.
But then you can take liberties in changing certain things, right? Like the scale of the human or the artist, scale of the slab, scale of the seating, etc.
Yeah, interesting. So I don't know if you if anyone in the audience or you saw my Instagram, I posted like in 2009 is when I graduated from my undergraduate, and I did my thesis, my dissertation on video games and architecture, and will we see architects designing in video games, and you know, is it an opportunity or a new land for us to venture into? And I remember at the time, it was, you know, there were architects designing in it, and the kind of argument, or like one of the arguments was like, you know, how many people at that time, Halo was like the game, right? It was like everyone was playing Halo, and at that time, like how many people had walked through the environments and the buildings that in Halo versus how many people have been to, you know, the Lloyds of London or some other masterpiece or something. The chances are like the amount of people that have experienced the space of Halo is, you know, millions and millions, right? Whereas how many people have actually been to St. Paul's Cathedral or something like that, like probably nowhere near as much. And I remember at the time I was like trying to find architects that had worked in video games. There's examples of architects that had transitioned into the video game industry. I remember finding some bits and bobs about Richard Rodgers helping like GTA make a London version, or you know, like these little snippets. And I really thought it was something that was going to take off, but it hasn't been, like, it's what, 10 years, more than 10 years later. And you know, you guys have just collaborated with PUBG. You know, there have been architecture collaborations before, but it's now seems way more plausible, because I think we're access to video games and the technology between our industry is blurring so much. And the whole kind of idea of games just being this thing you buy on a disc and then you play it at home. Now it's all like you're sharing these worlds that you join into the world rather than you bring the world home with you on a disc, if that makes sense. So yeah, I think it was really interesting to see your guys' collaboration. So maybe it'd be interesting to if what you can to say of it, like how that collaboration came about, and for those of you who in the audience that may not know what the project is, maybe if you could briefly explain what you guys did.
Yeah, sure. It's a interesting time now, like, because the collaboration kind of worked because we are using similar technologies, both there is a sync in we kind of use quite a lot of game technologies in our design, so, and there is a sync in that, so that's how the collaboration kind of came about. So the collaboration was to design a building in one of their maps with PUBG. PUBG is like a first-person shooting game. So they wanted to create this medical center, which is going to be replacing the existing one there, which was previously in the map, replaced with design of our building. So the building, it's already public. You can download the game and go into Erangel unranked mode. Erangel is the map. And then you will find the building, our building there. So the objective was to create this kind of medical center where there were these different spaces which had to be interconnected. And then they also wanted certain features such as people to hide in the space so that they get vantage points, so you can shoot people. Access the building through the roof. So these were some of the features which we kind of worked on. So you can directly land on the roof of the building and jump into the courtyard. So these are kind of things which kind of interested us in the gameplay. And that's what we tried to incorporate in our design. So if you look at the buildings which are generally around in the map, these things are not so freezable because they're all they're not designed for that. So we wanted to kind of break away from that, and yet so there are these three elliptical things which are connected together by a central atrium where you can walk up, and then we also design furniture based on the rooms. So there were rooms for anti-aging, there were rooms for therapy and things like that, and they had their own medical equipment from which we created the furniture, which can be used to hide from your opponent. Mm-hmm. And some interesting things we figured out as through the gameplay was so we had this kind of spiral ramp kind of going in the building. And one of the first things, like, people generally, which we didn't expect, but people started to do, was you can actually go around in the map in a car. And people started to get the car into the building and go up the ramp in the car. So, which is something we never thought of, but it's kind of interesting, interesting. How people would use it. So. That was kind of interesting. And then trying to fit, I think, in terms of the collaboration, that was one, was the that we had the sync in technologies, which was kind of good. And then it was a co-branded thing, so it was so we were also looking into this kind of cyber physical spaces, game spaces, and they were also looking for an art designer to design one of their buildings. So that's how it came about.
Yeah, it's cool. I'm just watching, rewatching a video from earlier of, like, I think it was one of the adverts, but it's a really cool space. I'm almost shocked it's taken so long for, you know, architects to jump into this space, because I think it's a really fun, interesting space. And like I said, I wonder how many people have been running around your building since it's gone live. Like,
yeah, I think that's kind of the interesting domain. It's like, right, as you mentioned, like not many people might have visited Lloyd's building, but if it was digital, like, you would get millions of people visiting it. And that's another kind of interesting, like, how people navigate this space can actually help you design better the physical space. So that's also an interesting domain of research, which we will look into. If we have access to that data, it's like how people navigate the building. That could be interesting.
Yeah. That'd be super interesting.
That's a super, like, I've never thought of that. Sorry, I'm Guillaume. I've been silent from the beginning. But there is something that I've always been wondering about, because there are all this simulation about, you know, how people move through a building, and it's like heavy coding about, you know, trying to simulate how people behave. But it's clearly just a model, and, you know, you'll never get anywhere close to what people would actually do. I was wondering if there is a space to, like, as you're doing simulating the building, and get, like, I don't know, an emergency situation, and see how people would instinctively get out from the building, or you know, how they would congregate in certain areas, etc. Is that something that's, I guess it's a bit more pragmatic, but is that something that you guys introduced in your, I guess, digital models as well?
Yeah, so currently, like, a lot of these, as you were saying, it's based on simulations, and then trying to, so like Autodesk did this research in one of their buildings where they were trying to see how people moved around in the building during occupancy, and then trying to correlate their simulations with that data set. It's research is kind of going in that direction now, like, even our as Faisal was mentioning, the parametric semiology group, they're also combining AI with the agent simulation. Yeah, but the interesting thing would be, as you suggested, was if we can get data from people playing it.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, that would be, you'll get much more data points than if it was a physical building, people using it. It takes a while to get the data points. But if it is digital, and you have it, you kind of embed it into your gameplay that, okay, it's part of the gameplay that there is some fire escape thing they have to do. So then you will naturally get people running and seeing, you will get these data, which will help you design your physical building better.
Yeah, it's like escape the room, but escape the building, and you just...
yeah, so you just have to create the right scenario within your game to do that. And then naturally you will get... So that's where, like, I think probably a collaboration with architects and game designers would help, because games have these kind of scenario-based things. You just have to design the correct scenario, and you'll naturally get like a lot of data.
And probably make it fun enough so that people would actually play the game.
Yeah.
As I'm online, I have another question. There is like a lot of exploration about, I guess, geometry and kind of like pushing the boundaries of what's not necessarily possible in the real world and trying to push it in digital world. I was wondering if there is such thing about program, like we're talking about a lot of kind of video game oriented program, which is just wandering around or shooting other people or driving a car on the ramp. Mm-hmm. I was wondering if there are other exploration. I've heard once, and I can't remember where it was, but there was these people exploring VR in order to have kind of a therapeutic experience, like almost close to meditation. That's clearly not necessarily possible to simulate in reality, but having the, you know, the digital environment, you could create like the sensation of floating or having whatever light effects you wanted. I can't really think of any other type of program, but I wonder if there is in your research.
You mean by program?
Kind of coding? Usages, I guess. Yeah, kind of like what are people actually doing in the virtual space? Like we've heard concerts, but that's, I guess, like a different version of what exists already in the real world, or gaming, etc.
I guess so flying, for example, you can fly in the metaverse.
Yeah.
So you need like doors on the side of the buildings to fly into.
Flying, but also we're kind of creating this kind of where user interface, so where people can configure their buildings. So that kind of natural application, which we see happening in the metaverse, because we customizing spaces for people. So people can come and customize a given 3D environment based on their preferences, and then view from within the space of the metaverse whether this thing is what they like or not. And it doesn't need to have a physical equivalent, but still can create. So that kind of customization, I think, is interesting, right? Because in that sense, you're allowing the end user who's the playing the game customize their own space and then see where that goes to. And that's something we would like to explore, to see what people, if given a choice, what would people create on their own.
Yeah, I think that's super interesting. That's one I've been thinking about a little bit as well, which you kind of alluded to another product, the Liebelands project, which is an interesting chapter, because I remember I've been watching that competition. I mean, they've been running a few competitions, right, for a few years. For those of you who are unfamiliar, Liebeland is a piece of land. I forget exactly where it is. I'll have to look it up whilst I'm talking. It's in between Serbia, is it? Or I'm just trying to. It's a piece of land in between Croatia and Serbia. That was it. Mm-hmm. Which was like, I don't know, has been unclaimed or something like that. And, you know, essentially this collective that is now called Liebeland, I guess, have claimed it as their own. Mm-hmm. And it's going to be like a new country, essentially a new, it's big enough. It's about the size of a city. It's not a huge piece of land. In fact, it says on Wikipedia, the area is 7 kilometers square.
Yeah.
So it's, and they've been running a competition for the city a few times now for architects to vision what the city is going to be. And one of the things that they were quite interested in driving the city was like blockchain technology and that kind of stuff. And following the competition, I almost participated in it, but I just didn't have enough time at that time. But it was quite disappointing as an architect to see what we propose as architects, because it is a real thing. They are actually trying to create this city. But the proposals were just absolutely bonkers. It was just like massive. Like the first bit, there was one where the whole building never touches the ground, and it was like, you know, this epic multi-billion dollar structure, or it was something that was like, you know, so out there. And I just felt, you know, as architects, it was just, you know, we were given the chance to potentially create a vision for an actual new city or country, and we just gone absolutely nuts with it. And so I think there's something quite interesting when I know you guys are involved, and Patrick is quite involved in it. Mm-hmm. And there's something really interesting about what you said about, like, you're designing it in the metaverse or as a virtual experience for people to experience in order to dictate how you actually build the real thing, which is quite interesting. We had a project in the office where we were doing a similar thing, but it was not quite, it was like almost testing rather than just letting the public go wild in there. But there is something really interesting about that. It's you know, it's almost like a digital twin, metaverse. They're all like somewhat buzzwords at the same time, but there's something quite interesting about that. Test it out, and then it actually feeds into the performance of the real thing. That's quite interesting. We could almost have a podcast about Liebeland, actually, if we could get a few of the right people, because it is an interesting chapter, right?
Yeah, it is. It's an interesting project, and yeah, there are quite a few people involved in it. So it'll be it's an interesting realm, and how to actually develop the city through rules. So you would set up a certain rule and then plug it up into the metaverse and the blockchain and see how the city would develop, and then try to use that as a parameter or guidance to make it physical. So, and that, I think that realm of digital physical, that's kind of an interesting one, trying to get feedback initially digitally from investors, from people who want to be in that land, and then actually realize them in the physical world. And the interesting things were also work incubators. So there were some interesting discussions about, so if it was a physical world, you can't do this, right? So in that, let's say there is a parcel of land in the morning, people who get up in Australia, it's become, that space becomes for people in Australia. But over as Australia goes to sleep, someone in the US can have the same land, but configured for their office. So you can have this, the same parcel being occupied by multiple users. And that's an interesting aspect which we should also start considering when we design for the digital, but that won't be feasible in the physical.
Yeah, that's super interesting. So I think we will open up any questions, guys. If you guys have any questions as we're talking, raise your hand. It's a very casual talk as usual, so jump in at any moment. And we have a first question from Amir. Good to see you. I haven't seen you for a little bit, I feel.
Thanks, Ole. Thank you. First of all, thank you very much for very interesting topics that you host in this channel or club. It's very niche, and I really like it because there's nowhere else that I can, you know, get to hear much of discussions around these topics. And thanks very much, Vishu, for your insights. I just had one question. I almost see this vision of, you know, a metaverse that becomes this kind of graveyard of architectural projects that were never built. I mean, I'm sorry if this this topic has been discussed before, I'm not aware of it, but as someone who's working for ZHA, do you have, like, does the practice have a vision to kind of build the projects that were not realized in the real world in the metaverse that people can actually, you know, experience them. I can see like very clearly how like projects like Fun Palace of Cedric Price could come through you know, virtual reality in a really interesting ways. And I see like one way of you know, these projects living in this time could be, you know, they becoming these experiences in metaverse. Is that something that ZHA is also you know, thinking about or working possibly? I'm interested to know.
Yeah, it's an interesting question.
Zaha world, and then yeah. We'll create big world, and
yeah, it's something. Yeah, I can't say right now because yeah, there are some discussions around it, but yeah, it's something I can't say concretely. What would that be?
I think it's
like a fun thing, right? Like especially like there's like a lot of assets already in any of the offices. There's like a lot of 3D assets of built and unbuilt work. So it is like that asset is really especially if you're going into the metaverse and the digital space, that asset makes a lot of sense, and you don't have to recreate things. You can use and adapt these assets to certain kinds of metaverses, not necessarily all of them. It depends on what the metaverse is trying to do, but certainly you could reuse some of the unbuilt work. Yeah, it will be also, yeah, similar, like a great example is the generator project you said of Cedric Price. This, if it is implemented in the right way, yeah, metaverse would be the right platform to kind of bring this all back and experience it.
Yeah. If I can add to that.
Oh, yeah, go on, Faisal.
Sorry, Ali. Yeah, I just wanted to add to that because I think that is very interesting, right, to the future of the metaverse. What I've experienced is that although a lot of designers can use existing designs and projects and upload them to any platform or any web-based platform to showcase them, I think what's really going to be the driving force for the metaverse in the future is uniquely designed spaces for brands and companies. Because so far, like what we've been doing at Illusor is, you know, companies come to us wanting to design, whether it's a mini metaverse or a space or upload their projects or optimize it for VR, whatever the project is, it's usually very specific. And we have to almost develop a completely new brief for each project. Like the briefs are slightly different from, you know, when you have a real world project with a client and you have a, you know, set brief for architecture. This, we have to kind of develop a whole new brief and a whole new approach for the metaverse. And in similar ways, you know, you have spaces, specifications, how many people, the tech aspect of it. So I don't think the majority or the driving force for the metaverse would be existing projects. I think those will exist maybe as sort of fillers or interesting spaces that people want to explore. But the main sort of environments for the metaverse, which will drive the most traffic and have the most investments, is going to be spaces uniquely designed for the metaverse with a lot of the considerations that Vishu was talking about earlier, you know, things to do with navigability and you know, aspects like that. That's my take so far on it.
Yeah, that's an interesting point. But in coming back to the unbuilt one, like you can actually like certain conceptual ideas, it doesn't need to be the exactly one-to-one replication, but the conceptual ideas which were not feasible in the built world, they can be actually explored in the digital world. And that's, you don't just plug in the same asset you have of an unbuilt work into the metaverse, but you'll have to adapt it to the certain use case in the metaverse. But you can have conceptually some features which were not feasible in the digital world, that's why it was not built, but adapted to the metaverse. And that, I think that's how the conceptual idea can remain, but not maybe exactly one-to-one the same unbuilt project in the metaverse.
Yeah, or it could be seen almost as a museum, like of, you know, what has been done. And it's not because you know, it's not being created for a specific current desire of someone to build something, but just a trace of what has been done. And I could imagine even like, you know, recreating things that's been destroyed, like buildings from the past, and being able to still see them and experience them in as close as possible to what they were could be also an application, I guess.
Yeah, one thing I want to add to Faisal's point, I think it's I kind of agree with you, but another side of this is that you take that kind of existing project and you kind of optimize it or kind of utilize it to the kind of conceptual needs of the VR world. Like I can see, like Cedric Price project, for example, could be redesigned in a way that, you know, so many things that cannot happen in the real world can happen in the VR world, for example. And I can see like many of Zaha Hadid's like competition projects that were not built, they can be actually projects that can be modified to VR world in a way that like there is no gravity, like people are floating, things are floating, but like the main concept is there, but you just modify it to certain needs that you have in VR. Maybe that's one way. And something else I want to mention was maybe like there are, as we said, like there are different metaverses for different purposes. Like there are probably metaverses for purposes of learning, for example. I can see like these spaces become, like as you said, like museums of, you know, architecture that was never realized, for example. I can see like the cenotaph of Newton, which is like a very imaginary kind of architecture, can be built in metaverse in a way that, you know, you can actually see really fun things inside it, and like you never can see that in real life. But yeah, definitely, I think it's a very interesting topic.
Yeah, and also like the discussion will mature a bit more, right? So it's like it's been a kind of like a year. People have started to discuss about this in public. So there these things also have to run its course a bit to mature, and things will evolve. Yeah, but these are very interesting ideas you put forward. Right? So one is whether it can be a museum or it can be. Yeah, like it depends. Like the metaverse will also have its own client, right? So there will be client constraints. So each the project coming to an architect, unless the architect themselves are doing the metaverse for their own, but each of these metaverses will have their own client, and the client will have certain briefs and constraints which you have to respond to even in the metaverse world. And that's why like all of the metaverses would be different. Although they're all based on the same technologies.
By the way, sorry, Ali, I just wanted to mention on that, there's something very interesting that I think will become very popular in the next 2 to 5 years. You know, as Gillian was saying about historic buildings and events that happened, and also inputting some things and experiences from gaming, I think that's going to become very, very popular. So you're going to be able to go back to whether it's a Frank Lloyd Wright building or it's a, you know, Imhotep building from, you know, 7,000 years ago or whatever. You're going to be able to go back to certain times in history and experience that event as it occurred. So you're going to have the same way you can experience things in games with like rigged avatars and animation. You're going to be able to do that, but the events will be very, very real in VR. So you're going to almost feel like you're going back in history. And I think museums and maybe some different platforms will start implementing that. I think that's going to be very, very popular in the future.
I think we just cracked the time machine problem.
I think there's something really interesting about the, you know, the business model of architecture. Like, you know, you could be a very successful firm, and you know, I'd be curious to ask some people in the office, like, you know, what our build rate is. I'd say Big, for example, has a pretty good build rate, but I would still say only, let's say, 5% or 10% of products actually get built. Mm-hmm. So you've got 90% of these products that live in this virtual world of Rhino or you know, Revit or whatever you're designing these things in, that just live in the world of big servers or Zaha servers, some, you know, located somewhere in the office or something like that. So like, could it, I think you're right, there's, it's not just about plonking ideas into a metaverse and that's it, but like, you know, you could modify them slightly and put them in a metaverse, and maybe it's a place to go and experience it or see how people interact with it, or, you know, there's the project can kind of live on just because it's not built in the real world. We now have a place to put them in the virtual world. I think there's something super interesting about that. Like, maybe what if Arc Daily created like a Arc Daily metaverse and all the products just go into there? Or, you know,
even like student great. Projects, like imagine a metaverse full of student projects. Oh, like, no, crazy. I mean,
wow, yeah, that would be incredible. I mean, think it would just be a nuts city.
Yeah, but like, you would need a server really large then to make that run. So
yeah,
there would be limitations. Yeah, for like what is feasible and what is not, especially at the current state. We obviously, like, over the years, the computation will grow and there'll be much and much more things which will be possible. Like, one of the main limitations currently is the number of multiplayers you can have in a given space, right? So there is a limitation there. So even though you have the assets, you can't have multiple people experiencing the same space at the given time. There is a limit there. But so that limitation has to be, like, you need to overcome that, then it becomes much more. So if a given space was designed for 100 people, but now there are 1,000 people there in the virtual world, things will start to change. So there is computational limitation, which we'll obviously overcome in a few years' time. But then you need to design the space for adaptability, right? Because you don't never know how many people are actually going to be there. So it might be a space for initially designed for 100, but if 1,000 people are there, can the space change or adapt to the number of people? And yeah, those could be some interesting scenarios to play out.
I think in addition to that, I think that the most important factor, I think, for the metaverse is, what would people want to interact with the most? What kind of spaces would they want to visit the most, right? Because the metaverse is pretty much just the evolution of the internet, right? It's Web 3.0. It's the next step for the internet. So if you look at the internet, what kind of websites do people visit the most, right? There's social media platforms, there's streaming platforms, there's like open source databases like Wikipedia. So there's certain kind of websites that kind of define the internet because of the traffic and because of the investment that goes into it. So I think the same thing would start to define the metaverse. How many people or what kind of platforms or what kind of spaces do people like to interact with the most, and what kind of spaces do the the big clients fund the most? And I think those are the kind of environments that'll begin to define the future of the metaverse. And that's why earlier I was saying, you know, it's going to be most likely uniquely designed spaces, because it's not that I don't think existing projects have a space. I think there's definitely going to be like platforms and worlds with that. I just feel like the ones people would want to visit the most and the ones that clients would fund the most, therefore being the one that would define the metaverse in the large scale, is going to be uniquely designed spaces. Obviously, I don't know the future, so it will be still very interesting to see what happens. But also, speaking about clients, I did want to ask you, Vishu, what's your experience with working with PUBG? Is it the same as working with a normal client to build a normal building, or are there some other challenges that come with it? Or, you know, what's it like working with a gaming company as a client?
Yeah, it is in a sense a bit similar to working with the client in the physical world, because there are constraints they want us to consider, right? So there was like a weekly meeting with them trying to discuss. So this is what we are trying to think, and the development team. So they used to, the development team of PUBG used to play and give us feedback. Okay, this is working, this is not working in terms of gameplay. So then we had to adapt our design. So it's in that sense, it's like similar to designing with the physical world, where you get feedback from the client based on the feedback. Here could be spatial in the client sense, but it could also be certain related to guidelines, right? So there'll be someone in the team who's talking about guidelines in the physical world. So similarly, there were guidelines given by the developer, game developer. Okay, this, you need to keep the number of polygons to X, and these areas, the curvature is too much. It's not feasible. We need to have people kind of not. So when you're navigating the space, you need to have spaces where you can hide. These are kind of things we were getting as feedback, and that is kind of interesting because when we are designing for the physical world, we try to, when we design an atrium and things, we want more and more people to see each other. But when it comes to the gaming of a first person shooter, even though you have a similar space, you should have ways to hide and not expose yourself. So those were kind of, they had some interesting ways to analyze a given space for such parameters and let us know, okay, this needs to change. So in that sense, it was similar, but at the same time, we are optimizing for different constraints than in the physical world.
Do you feel like go ahead.
I was going to ask what the timeline was. Like, did you find, was it quicker than your average concept project, for example, or not? Like, I'm just curious if it's you got less things to consider, but you know, is it a slightly expedited design process?
Yeah, the timeline was like any, let's say, like a technology demonstrator, so 3 months from design to implementation. So yeah, in that sense, very specific. Like let's say we did the Venice Biennale bridge, which also took about 4 months from design to production. So the same timeline was kind of used for this game development. So it was from design to production, takes about 4 months, because there we had to. So one was the gameplay. The main part was the gameplay aspect, that it should be feasible to play inside of it, and it is considering all the constraints of the gameplay. So that was something in the production pipeline, which we kind of learned through the process. So if we were to do another game, another collaboration with PUBG or any other gaming partner, I think it'll go much faster the next time, because now we know what is the production pipeline from design to game. So now next time it will be much faster, but because it was the first time, we were also learning what the production pipeline is, and they were also learning how architects design these spaces. Right. So there was like learning on both sides.
I guess a true comparison would be like, to build that building would take at best 3 to 4 years, like if not a lot longer. So 3 months is a pretty good.
If it is in China, I think it would be built in 2 years. But yeah.
If it's China, you're looking 2 to 3 years. But yeah, maybe in Europe or UK or something, maybe 7 or 8.
It depends on, like if there is a requirement for it to be built. But yeah. But yeah, let's say 4 months. It took 4 months to design and exit, have it production ready, so that millions of people could play at the same time.
What do you think the gaming company like PUBG would say about their experience working with an architect? Like, if you were to sort of speak from their mind, what do you think they would say? Because I'm guessing they work with a lot of designers and maybe spatial designers, environment designers, developers. What do you think they would say about working with an architect? And what do you think the expertise is that an architect would bring to the table that other designers perhaps wouldn't have?
Yeah, at the end of it, this was a building, right? So it had to work as a like you should be able to use it as a building. So, and that's why, like, I think they want to work with architects. I think they were kind of I don't know if they, I can't say this, but they were not, I think, they were not expecting the technologies to be so sync in sync, like architects to be using game technologies for design. I think that's something they weren't expecting. And now that architects are using it, I think they should be able to collaborate with more people because they are aware of it.
If you can talk about that, can you, I assume we're talking about Unreal because Pug's based in Unreal, right? Were you guys, you know, using that? Or yeah, if you can you talk about the tools you guys communicate with and design with?
Yeah, so PUBG is developed on Unreal, which is the game tech, but they also design with, they were also familiar with mesh modeling, for example, which is what we use in Maya. And so there was an easy transfer from us to them because we design our buildings also with meshes, like at ZHA. So that's what I was saying, like in sense of technologies we use for our designs, there is a sync with like how game production and developers would use. They use the same softwares. So that sync was very useful because the transfer of content was easy and for them to use our models. I think that's something also they were not used to, right? They, like generally when an artist gives them a model, they have to recreate it at their end such that it works in their game, it works as a mesh and optimized for that. So, but now that we as designers also know that workflow, they can almost use the geometry we give them. And
that was interesting. So Maya was kind of like the way you guys communicated it in a way.
More than Maya. Yeah. So we also used Unreal to create like our own kind of first person viewer. So you can navigate the space. So they were also interested to know those things because they also use it on there and they have tools to given any space evaluate if this really functions as a space for shooting and if it works in terms of production ready, that is it really like limiting the performance or is it at the borderline. So these kind of things, they have tools already inbuilt which again takes a mesh model.
How much of the gameplay were you guys involved in? For example, on Unreal, like you can set like the boundaries where the players can access and where they can't, etc. How much of that were you involved in, or did you leave that up to them?
Yeah, so that was like the weekly feedback loop. So we used to update our designs, send it to them for evaluation. They used to check it in their side and then get back to us whether this is feasible or not feasible. And then, so it was a collaborative, iterative workflow where we were incrementally improving upon the design, both in terms of features, spatial features, but also in terms of performance.
Okay, right. That's awesome, man. And what do you think about the future of this collaboration between architects and gaming platforms? Because I think maybe at the moment, the barrier of entry is still pretty high. You know, you still need to, you know, not only know how to design 3D models, but how to optimize them, how to, you know, the workflow, as you said, between like whatever design platform or software you use and Unreal Engine. And if you're building your own platform, you know, WebGL, WebXR, or Unreal. But I think the barrier of entry will start to get a little lower because people would, you know, become familiar with these as time goes on. Perhaps maybe in a year's time, every architecture student will know the workflow and will become comfortable with these platforms. Mm-hmm. So where do you think things will go? Because, you know, ZHA is perhaps one of the most influential architecture firms of all time, right? So you guys are at the tip top. So whatever gaming platform wants to collaborate with architecture, we'll start with you guys. But in, let's say, 5 years time, when everyone knows how to do this and everyone's familiar with it, where do you think things will be? Are gaming platforms just going to collaborate with any architecture student, or are they still going to
want to collaborate with the best? You know, like, what do you think is going to happen? Is it going to be saturated, or is there still going to be some sort of hierarchy of design, if you will?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think it's in that sense, again, people would value like good designs, right? So like even in the physical realm, like everyone can design buildings. There will be architects who will be doing buildings in the game industry, but still there will be certain features and style someone is looking for, then they will go to an XYZ architect for that. So in that sense, I think it'll, even though the thing is virtual, the dynamics of how people get projects would be the same as in the physical world. So I think maybe in the future there might be competitions for designing for these games, which is not currently. So if you were to have a physical equivalent, so now you have competitions for master plans, competitions for buildings. So I think in the future there might be competitions to develop maps for gameplay, which is which would could. So now this is only one building in a huge map, right, of Erangel. This, I don't know, it's a very big map, and this is only one building in it. What if, like, if you were to do like a redesign the whole map? So I think you'll need designers there. So again, there'll be like wide scopes, so design of the map, then design of one building. Maybe you would also be having designers designing the lobby spaces. So just before the game starts, there is like a lobby space where all the players come in and then go into gameplay. So those lobbies also need would be an opportunity to design in the future. And I think there's like a lot of opportunities we as designers can contribute in all these various ranges within one given game. So what if you multiply it with like a Fortnite and other games, you see the opportunities growing exponentially.
Yeah, I'm sure you'll see people, you know, emerging in this space, but then you also see, you know, familiar characters from architecture in some other spaces, hopefully.
Yeah.
Awesome. I don't know if we got any other questions from the crowd. I think we'll start to taper it off, because I know we've had you for an hour and a bit now. But yeah, super interesting chat. But yeah, if you guys have questions, raise your hand. We'll bring you up to the stage. Otherwise, yeah, what would you say? I mean, I feel like this is a super interesting space, and it's going to be growing. Is this what you are kind of most excited about at the moment, like video games / metaverse, or do you have any other kind of topics on your mind?
Yeah, it's one of our research strands within the group. So we are very super excited about the metaverse and trying to design for the metaverse, but at the other side we are also seeing what's interesting is like the other research strand on architectural geometry, which we started since the inception of the group. Now with digital design technologies and fabrication technologies reaching maturity, it's kind of interesting to see the scale of applications where it is getting applied. So things getting moving into construction of these technologies, getting used more and more used in construction of large scale projects like stadiums, metro stations and arenas, etc. And that airports, that's what is also exciting for us. So we are also contributing in that end of the spectrum as well, trying to physically realize things in a digital fabrication, digital design way.
It's too many things going on right now. It's too exciting.
We yeah,
we're struggling to keep up and put content out there on all these things.
Yeah, that's why XX is a lot of opportunities for.
Yeah,
it's an exciting time to be a designer, because you can
choose
a realm you want to be invested in, whether it is
designing
only for virtual, or designing for the physical, or like other opportunities are like actually just becoming a developer, right? Writing libraries, right? Writing frameworks. This architects are even getting hired there. So it's super interesting times.
Yeah, we didn't even open the can of worms that is blockchain and NFTs. So we'll keep that stored for another, for part two. We'll get you back on.
yeah. Happy to come and talk about that.
Awesome. I think we'll wrap it up there. I think it's been a super interesting discussion. Thanks so much for joining. I know there's going to be some more stuff announced about the product, so everyone stay tuned to Vishu's Instagram, and you can check out his page. And of course, I'm sure we'll see it on Zaha and all the other channels. Yeah, we'll be back next week. We're going to have the developers of Rhino Inside come and join us, Scott and Ishan. And so we'll be talking a little bit about Rhino Inside, which feels like we're kind of going from space back down to planet Earth, talking about Rhino Inside and Revit and stuff like that. But still super, super interesting. Otherwise, Vishu, thank you so much for joining. Welcome to Clubhouse. Hopefully you'll pop your head into some future talks. Otherwise, stay tuned. We'll also be announcing soon our upcoming Grasshopper 101 Masterclass, which we're just kind of formalizing, but we will be doing a online masterclass at the end of March, it looks like. So stay tuned for that. Otherwise, thank you guys for all joining. Hope you have a good rest of your Sunday, wherever you are in the world. So you're morning, your afternoon, your evening. But yeah, thanks for joining. Thanks again, Vishu, and we'll see you all. Yeah,
thanks for the invite. Happy to be chatting. Yeah, like Rhino Inside also sounds cool. That's something that also interests me. So probably I'll join the next week.
Come join. We got the Scott and Ishan.
Yeah. They'll be good, both of them. Yeah. So be cool. Yeah, probably I will join in.
Great. Awesome.
Thanks.
Thanks, guys.
Thank you.
Awesome. Thanks, guys. And thanks, Vishu. Great talking to you about the metaverse. Yeah. I followed you on here and on Instagram, so hopefully we can stay connected about the metaverse.
Yeah, surely.
Thanks for joining. Yeah.
Thanks. Bye.